Hi, I'm Patricia Karvelas, host of Politics Now, the ABC's podcast unpacking the latest political news. Every week you'll hear me and the sharpest political minds at the ABC.
Ritual humiliation at which everybody laughs and pretends to be entertained by Donald Trump. That's on the Trump bingo card.
So join me for Politics Now on the ABC Listen app.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Snowtown murderer James Voutsakis will no longer get parole and will remain in an Adelaide prison. I'm Stephen Stockwell. Welcome to the case of Snowtown Parole.
The bodies in the barrels and now the bodies in the backyard.
11 people killed by the so-called Snowtown murderers.
James Voutsakis was involved in four murders between August 1998 and May 1999, serving life with a minimum of 26 years.
The youngest of the four men jailed over the murders has applied for parole.
Victims' families say he should never be released.
I'm astonished that we've even considered parole.
James Voutsakis pled guilty to killing four people as one of the Snowtown murderers and sentenced to life in prison with a non-parole period of 26 years. In August, that non-parole period ended and he was approved to return to the streets of Adelaide, but a last-minute review has overturned that decision. James Voutsakis remains in prison and this has started a fight between the head of the parole board and the Parole Board Review Commissioner. We are in this kind of unprecedented ground where no one really seems to know what happens from here. And to try and unpack what is going on, not just over the last week, but the last month or so, I'm joined by the ABC's Rebecca Bryce from the Adelaide Newsroom. Welcome, Beck.
Thanks, Stocky.
And also James Wakeland, a senior reporter currently working at 7:30, who reported from the Snowtown Bank Vault the day that the bodies were uncovered. Welcome, James.
Thanks, Stocky. Great to be with you again.
A couple of months ago, we were expecting James Voutsakis' release from an Adelaide prison into a pre-release sentence before he returned into the community on parole. But we saw a review from the South Australian Attorney General that led to the parole decision being overturned. And I mean, Beck, this has all been quite dramatic.
Yeah, it sure has. As you said in your opening, he was granted parole in August. And at the 11th hour, the Attorney General, Khayyam Maher, decided to seek a review of that decision. It's only the third time since the laws changed in 2016 that we've seen a review into the parole board's decision to grant somebody parole. It was pretty hard to chase down the details of that review. I think Claire Rawlinson, the EP of this program, was instrumental in finding out that the Attorney General had made that decision. Often it depends on someone picking up the phone at the right time, so it was a really good get from Claire. We were, as members of the media, allowed into one hearing, and we'd hoped that would mean that we'd be allowed into all of them, but unfortunately the main hearing was held behind closed doors, and then the Commissioner's decision landed in our inboxes.
Yeah, I mean, I want to talk a little bit about some of those closed court hearings a little bit later and also the fact you weren't able to take in any electronic devices to the one you could go into. But first, what reasons have we seen for the Parole Board Commissioner overturning the decision of the South Australian Parole Board?
Well, we weren't sure we would get any reasons at all to begin with. The Commissioner only committed to releasing his decision. But in the end, we got six pages of information, which came through by email, as I mentioned. The two key reasons that he gave for overturning the decision to release Voutsakis was the gravity of the offending and also the fact that it's the first time that he's eligible for parole. His decision actually also summed up some of the submissions that were made behind closed doors, and some of them gave a really good insight into Voutsakis' behaviour behind bars. So the lawyer who spoke on behalf of the Attorney General raised the fact that he's had 29 drug tests since 2001, and three of them have come back positive, two to methadone and one to amphetamines. There's also been instances where he refused to give samples or gave diluted samples and that drugs were found in a strip search. So effectively, they were trying to argue that the parole board had underestimated his drug use in custody. And they also submitted that he hasn't attended enough programs on how to live without violence when he's returned to the community. And that went to their argument that he's at a greater risk of reoffending if he is released.
Mm.
Interestingly, they did point out that he couldn't take part in group sessions because of the notoriety of his crimes, which was one of the things that he was supposed to do.
Yeah, right. I mean, James, when we were talking about this, you know, a couple of months ago, looking at the reasons that James Lysakis had been approved for parole, I mean, one of the things I remember us talking about was the fact that he hadn't been using drugs in prison and, you know, it was kind of easy to get that. So that kind of seems to run against what we heard the first time around.
Yes, certainly Francis Nelson KC, who's the chair of the parole board, was, as you know, very much in favour, or had decided along with the rest of the parole board that James Lysakis should get parole. And that was, of course, the decision that was then reviewed. And part of that was the fact that she said he had been a good prisoner. He had done his time and he was ready to be released. She said there wasn't signs of drug use or any of the type of behaviours that would give the parole board cause to reflect and maybe not allow him out. And she made that point in her press conference that she's making decisions all the time not to let people out on parole. And so they didn't take this lightly. He'd spent 26 years in prison and they'd made that decision with all those things in mind. And she was very clear and very strong in her press conference that she thought that Michael David KC, who is the Parole Administrative Review Commissioner, had made a mistake.
Yeah, I'm kind of keen to talk a bit about the stoush that this has started in the kind of the world of the South Australian Parole Board, and we'll get to that in a minute. But Beck, I'd love to kind of hear a bit about how these hearings unfolded, because yeah, as I mentioned, there was one hearing that you weren't allowed to take any electronic devices in and got to, you know, relearn your shorthand basically, and then the hearing where kind of these submissions seem to have been made, you weren't allowed in at all, right?
Yeah, so that initial hearing where we weren't allowed to take electronic devices in was a directions hearing. It was an administrative hearing about how the process would go forward. I think it struck fear into most of the journos who were there that we were going to be without our phones. In South Australia, generally, you're allowed to record court proceedings on your phone as a member of the media for accuracy. You're not allowed to use the recordings in any broadcasts or anything like that, but most of us rely on those recordings. And so, yeah, back to the shorthand
to try to take down the details. That's so funny. When I was at the Advertiser, which is where I was when the original Snowtown murder case broke back in 98, we had to learn shorthand. And I went down to courts and we had to go 120 words a minute was the minimum that you had to get to be able to do it. I reckon I'd be going at about 20 words at the moment. I'd be quicker to write it out in. So, yeah, it would have been led to some interesting note-taking, no doubt, Brycey.
Yeah. The other thing that happened was that James Lysakis was there, not in person, but by video link. And right. It was a bit of a shock to see him.
Mm.
He looks like a normal person. And if I walked past him in the street, I don't think I would think, oh, there goes a serial killer.
Yeah.
So that was, yeah, interesting.
Yeah, and no one knows what James Lysakis looks like because his image has been suppressed since the original trial. So, yeah, to actually see him in that room on that screen would have been, yeah, really kind of surprising. And Beck, when you're talking about this hearing, have we got, you know, different lawyers, different parties all kind of making submissions to the commissioner, the parole board commissioner, Michael David KC, in this room as this hearing's unfolding? Is that what's going on?
So the hearing that we were allowed into was in a kind of meeting room. There were desks sort of set up in a rectangle shape and there were people sitting all around the table, lawyers for all of the parties. They sat and made their submissions. The journos were all sort of standing at one end. We had a lawyer there who made submissions on our behalf. So that hearing was in person and the submissions were all made in person. We don't really know exactly what happened in the closed hearing when the actual submissions around whether or not Lysakis should be released were made. It's possible that there were written submissions presented to the commissioner. It's very likely that verbal submissions were made to him as well. I did reach out to see if we could get copies of any documents which were supplied to him, and unfortunately that request was rejected.
Some of the things that Michael David KC, the Parole Board Commissioner, said seems to kind of run against those of Francis Nelson KC, who's the head of the Parole Board. But he's also noted that this is the first time that James Voutsakis has applied for parole. So is he basically saying that James Voutsakis needs to try a few more times?
I think it's fair to say that that's what he's saying. I mean, let's look at the wording, I think, that he used. He talks about the gravity of the offending as one of his reasons, and he says that this is the first occasion on which parole is available to release Mr. Voutsakis at this relatively early stage, and that would be a risk to the community, which is really interesting. After 26 years, he calls it at an early stage. So he's got a very, very clear view on the fact that he doesn't think that Voutsakis has earned his release, which is interesting and goes to, I guess, some of the points that Francis Nelson KC is making, saying that the former Supreme Court Judge Michael David KC, the commissioner in this case, is effectively re-sentencing Voutsakis and taking over from the sentencing judge. And you know, that's why I guess she's raised some of her significant concerns in the press conference she held shortly after the decision was made.
Yeah, and I think what she's trying to say, my interpretation of what she's trying to say, is that it's the job of the Parole Board and the Commissioner, the Parole Administrative Review Commissioner, to consider the suitability for parole but not the eligibility. So it's the Parole Board and the Commissioner's role to consider whether he has suitably rehabilitated enough to be allowed back into the community. So by singling out that it's his first application, I think what Francis Nelson KC is trying to argue is that the Commissioner's effectively extending his non-parole period, and that's not his job, that's the job of the courts.
That's right. The decision was made that he would get a 26-year in the sentencing, that he'd get his 26 years non-parole. Part of that was, of course, that decision was made because of the help that he gave to prosecutors in getting Wagner and Bunting convicted of 10 and 11 murders respectively. And that's something, interestingly, that was even raised by the Attorney General earlier in the year, that was important that Voutsakis was part of that case. And then we have that all flipped on its head by the decision of Michael David KC, the Commissioner.
The other point that Francis Nelson KC also made in that press conference, which I think was interesting, was by singling out the gravity of the offending as being a reason for refusing his release, she said that's never going to change. The offending is never going to become less grave. So she pointed out that that's very confusing for a prisoner like Voutsakis, because that's not something he'll be able to change.
Yeah, the offending is obviously incredibly serious. You know, you're looking at one of Australia's worst ever serial killings. And, you know, as we talked about in our earlier episodes on the case of Snowtown Parole, the role that James Voutsakis played, and you were talking about this before, James, was, you know, in giving evidence at the trial of Robert Wagner and John Bunting, you know, meant that the prosecutors were able to probably secure a conviction for more murders than they would have been able to without his assistance. And yeah, the decision that we see now sees him staying in prison for even longer. So, I mean, you know, does this decision kind of take away some of the incentive for people to cooperate with investigations?
Yes, that's really an interesting point you make, Stocky, and it's a point, as I mentioned very briefly before, the Attorney General himself raised earlier this year, that Voutsakis had been that key witness. He had provided key evidence and real insight that they wouldn't have got if he hadn't turned Crown witness. So to then flip that all these years later and say that the offending was so extreme that he can't get parole on this occasion, I guess could lead to people that the prosecution are trying to get to be their Crown witness will see this and see that they might not necessarily get parole even if they are helping convict others.
Yeah. Francis Nelson, KC, is what I would describe as a kind of a strong personality. You know, very interesting person to kind of watch deliver a press conference. I don't get the feeling that she has taken this decision particularly well. What is she planning from here? How's she kind of looking at, you know, is she looking at fighting this decision?
Yeah, so the parole board has sought legal advice on effectively appealing against the commissioner's decision. She has retained another King's Counsel, Dick Whitington, who she has asked to look into whether or not the parole board can mount a judicial review of the decision. Effectively, that would be one or more Supreme Court judges looking into the legislation and the actions that the commissioner has taken and the decision that he's made and the basis for it, and making a decision whether or not to overturn it. And I think, as we've mentioned, because it's the first time this has happened, it's really almost precedent setting. So I suspect that's why we're seeing this approach at the moment. Frances Nelson has said she's not expecting any advice anytime soon from her lawyer, but probably likely mid-January, given it's so close to Christmas, that we'll be hearing more about that.
Yeah, so she was very strong, as you mentioned, as she always is. She is a very, Frances Nelson KC is a very strong personality. You know exactly where she stands when she speaks. And she made it clear that she thought that Michael David KC had made several errors in his decision. And she also raised the fact that there's no indication on when James Vassakis can reapply for parole as well. Normally there is a set period, or, you know, within 12 months they can reapply for parole again if they've been knocked back. But there's nothing within the decision that Michael David KC put down that indicated when he can come back and have another go at parole, which was really interesting.
Mm, yeah. We actually have some of Frances Nelson KC's press conference where she's talking about, you know, where she thinks Michael David KC has erred in his decision making.
There is little point in the court setting a non-parole period if it's going to be overruled by the Parole Administrative Review Commissioner, particularly where the legislation specifically says that in considering the gravity of the offending, the parole board is not to substitute its view for that of the sentencing judge. I think that means that the commissioner can't substitute his either. So that's concerning to us, and it's really a very important consideration.
That is Frances Nelson KC, the head of the South Australian Parole Board, talking about where she thinks Michael David KC, the South Australian Parole Board commissioner, has basically got it wrong in reviewing and rejecting James Vassakis's parole. What happens from here? We've got Frances Nelson KC getting this legal advice that's expected in, you know, kind of the next month or so. Where do we go?
Well, it really depends on what that legal advice is, because it's not clear yet that there is even an avenue available to the parole board to seek a judicial review. So I think where we go from here will very much hinge on the legal advice that she receives.
I think the interesting thing too, Brycey, is the fact that Frances Nelson is a very, very, very experienced lawyer herself. So she has a very strong opinion, legal opinion, on what's happened here. So part of the discussion will be, no doubt, on where she thinks the mistakes have been made, where Michael David KC has, in her opinion, erred. So no doubt she will have a strong view on where this goes. They've got 6 months to work out whether or not they do want that judicial review. But if I was a betting man, I'll say we'll be seeing one.
I find the level of lawyering happening around this decision just fascinating. You've got Michael David KC, a retired judge, going up against Frances Nelson KC. As you say, James, a very experienced lawyer. You've got all these barristers coming into these closed court hearings, and then in the middle of all this, you've got the kind of the top law officer of South Australia, the South Australian Attorney General, who is the guy who has, you know, requested this review in the first place, you know, last minute review into the decision from Frances Nelson KC. I mean, this is what he wanted, right? He wanted a review of this. He didn't want James Voorsakis on parole, so he must be pretty pleased with how this has gone.
Yes, certainly. This is exactly what the Attorney General wanted in the end. He put in for the review and he's got it. And you've got to also think about this in the context of the fact we've got an election coming up, a state election coming up in March. And every government and every opposition, for that matter, wants to be seen to be tough on crime. Mm-hmm. And to keep a serial killer behind bars is certainly something that the government decided is what it needed and what it wanted.
Yeah. And in his press conference, he was very guarded in his language because he's obviously quite concerned around the secrecy provisions that apply to these types of reviews. But he did say that this decision proves that there are robust checks and balances within the system and that the system works. And he very much also sort of reflected on the experience for victims, the victims' families and their friends, and was trying to sort of put them at the centre of the narrative. But there was a really interesting moment when he left the press conference. He walked away and he got a few steps away and then turned back with this big grin on his face and waved to the media. And someone from the media called out, "Merry Christmas," to the Attorney General. So it definitely seems as though he did get an early Christmas present.
So, yeah, reasons were given for parole. That was reviewed, and this is the decision that we have.
Thank you.
No worries. Thanks, Michael.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you, Dad.
That's a little snippet from the end of the Attorney General's press conference. As Beck was saying, the statement that he delivered was actually almost kind of canned because of the secrecy limitations around this decision. So it was, you know, pretty tightly scripted. The questions weren't, didn't really take us that far. But yeah, that little interaction at the end I thought was interesting and worth you hearing a bit about. James, I mean, I imagine this decision, as well as one that pleases the Attorney General, would be, you know, pleasing the families of the victims murdered by, you know, Voorsakis, Bunting and Wagner in these, you know, horrible serial killings over two decades ago. Have we heard much from the families or from the Victims' Rights Commissioner?
We've heard from Sarah Quick, who's the Victims' Rights Commissioner here in South Australia, and she made it clear that the families were very relieved that this decision has been made. We have to remember that only last year, Mark Ray Hayden was actually released, and he was the person who was convicted over seven counts of assisting offenders in relation to the Snowtown murders. So that really kicked off all the discussion around the Snowtown murders again last year. And of course, brought up all this pain again for the victims' families. And we spoke to some of those during that period. And it really is a very, very difficult thing to then go and relive. And Sarah Quick made the point that while this is a win for the families, they inevitably will be back here again when James Voorsakis applies for parole at some stage into the future.
I mean, James, Beck, this is a decision that's been made by the parole board to release initially James Voorsakis on parole. It's been overturned by the parole board commissioner. And, you know, that's kind of like led by the South Australian Attorney General, that review. How do we know if this is what the public wants?
It's a really interesting one, Stocky. I mean, certainly there are parts of the community that would be very happy that James Voorsakis is still behind bars. But there are others that go, well, he was 17 when this offending started for him. And also, he was under the influence of John Bunting, who he was living with, who is an absolute psychopath. So there is some sympathy in the community, I think, for James Voorsakis. I mean, I talk to people within my own immediate family about this, and some that I would have thought would say, no, he should stay there forever for everything he's done, have turned around and said, you know what, he was young, he's done his time, he should be allowed to have another crack at life. So it hasn't been quite the same as the Mark Ray Hayden case, where people were very strongly against him being released for his crimes and his involvement in the Snowtown murders. But James Voorsakis, I think there's a little bit more sympathy for within the community.
And we were talking before, Waco, about how this is a person who has spent the entirety almost of their adult life in custody. It would be very strange to enter prison as a 19-year-old and spend decades growing up, into an adult behind bars, incarcerated. So
that does leave that unknown, doesn't it, about what kind of individual we're dealing with now. And clearly that's something, and some of those issues that Michael David Casey has raised has definitely put some doubt in his mind, and that's why we end up where we do now, and James Lysakis is in purgatory.
Mm. Yeah, I think purgatory is kind of the perfect way to describe this, right? You know, it's unclear when he can reapply for parole. There's this kind of, you know, challenge to the review that keeps him in prison underway as well. So, yeah, we'll keep an eye on all of this on the case of Snowtown Parole. And, yeah, Rebecca Bryce, James Wakeland, thank you so much for joining us to kind of give us this insight and explain what's happened over the last couple of weeks as well.
Thanks, Docky.
Thanks for having us.
We'll be back in your feed on Tuesday next week. We're having Thursday off this week for the obvious reasons. And we have a special behind the scenes episode that we're going to be dropping into your feed just after Christmas. So grab yourself the ABC Listen app, and our present will be coming a little bit later, but it'll appear there slightly before it appears in any of the other podcast apps. So do me a favour, grab yourself the ABC Listen app, and we'll be back in your feed soon. The Case of Snowtown Parole is produced by ABC Audio Studios and ABC News. It's reported by Rebecca Bryce and James Wakeland and presented by me, Stephen Stockwell. Our supervising producer is Greg Muller, and our executive producer is Claire Rawlinson. This episode was produced on the land of the Kaurna and Wurundjeri people.